I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. This is Fronteras, a program about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and changing demographics in the Southwest. San Antonio was officially founded on May 5, 1718, 300 years ago. The small neighborhood of Barrio Laredito was established in what's now downtown San Antonio, just west of San Pedro Creek. Its history dates back almost as far as San Antonio itself. Its existence, however, was extinguished by expansion, construction, and gentrification in the 1970s. Its nearly three-century-old culture, however, lives on. Dr. Citlali Maria Centella is a cultural anthropologist. She's been researching the history and culture of this historic barrio, along with Dr. Jorge Luis Garcia Ruiz, an archaeologist and historian with the San Antonio campus of the Universidad Nacional Autónoma de México. Centella says the neighborhood was established around 1731, when Texas was still a part of Mexico. The settlers included Spaniards and Coahuiltecans, native people who lived in what's now the South Texas area.
So when they started settling, the culture in Barrio Laredito was a Mexicano culture with a hybridization of Coahuiltecan culture, Spanish culture, and it was a very rich culture. When the immigrants from the U.S. started coming, things started to change. But they received very well the American people, especially the Tejanos, the ones that wanted the Texas independence. So there was a lot of turmoil during the years of the independence, but Laredito kept growing and being very rich culturally.
So how did it get its name, Barrio Laredito? When you think of Laredito, you think of Little Laredo, which is further out towards the border. How did it get this name, and how far does the name date back?
This name came from Spain. It's a town in the north of Spain, a beautiful town because it's in the Cantabric, in the Atlantic Sea. And many of the Basques, this is in the Basque provinces, many of the Basques were part of the conquest and the colonization of America. And one of them, I don't know who, but one of them found Laredo. Laredo is in the path to San Antonio. Then some people from there decided to name this town as a Laredito, a Little Laredo.
Yeah. There were trails made by the Coahuiltecans to travel because they were nomadic people, so they had their own trails. When the people from New Spain came with some people from Spain and settled, they used those trails, but they were called King's Highways. So the King's Highway from Laredo to San Antonio to Nacogdoches and to the East Texas towns, little towns, were called Camino Real de Laredo. So Laredito started developing right there because it's the street Laredo. It's right there in downtown. And people started having their houses there. There was developing merchants and commerce. So this Camino Real de Laredo, or Laredo King's Highway, was very important because people was traveling by mules, by horses.
And trading.
So the name started being called Laredito, because it was not Laredo, the town of Laredo in the Rio Bravo, but it was Laredito. It was a neighborhood, a barrio. So the Barrio Laredito almost lived there where it is 300 years until it was demolished. But people had their roots there in the barrio, the Mexicano people.
So Jorge, Citlali took us a big jump into the future. She talked about how the neighborhood was demolished. But here this is this barrio that dates back 300 years. Can you take us a little bit through the evolution of the neighborhood and how it changed over the decades and in the last few centuries?
Well, San Antonio was founded the 5th of May of 1718. In that time was one of the poorest towns in the new city. They receive people who, it's hard to say, are leftovers, yeah? And also with the coming of the real invasion in the 1836 and the 1850s from people from the 13 colonies of the United States. The total population in Texas before that time was around 3,000, 4,000 people. And in just 10 or 12 years, the population, as this is an survey of the American Army, was 430,000 Americans in just 12 years. And also very important, we have to say, 180,000 slaves. A total population of 600,000 people surrounding just 3 or 4 thousand Hispanics.
But going back to Barrio Laredito, as you mentioned before, it was kind of a leftover neighborhood. There was no public housing to help sort of bring it up out of its sad state. How did Barrio Laredito stay alive? Because usually if you're in this small barrio and you're left with a very poor population that is probably getting smaller and smaller, how does this neighborhood stay alive for nearly 300 years?
Well, that's what we called it, cultural resilience, because that's the only explanation that we can have. When we talked about Barrio Laredito, they come in with their own cultural and artistic creations. How it lived through the 1970s? Well, it was really through our Mexican culture. I don't know if you know that the Chili Queens, which are one of the features of San Antonio of the past, they were from Laredito. And it was in 1813 when the horrible Medina battle happened in 1813. So there appear the first women that started doing their tables with the chile con carne to survive. So after that, it was like culinary culture. And then in terms of the social and cultural networks of the barrio, people was helping each other. The social networks of our culture made people survive during all those poverty years. And if you try to tell them it was horrible, no, they said it was the most beautiful life we could share with our neighbors. It's so beautiful, the life of these people of Barrio Laredito, because instead of creating like a feeling of hatred, they started finding ways to continue surviving in the best way they could do. So they had botanicas with herbs instead of the regular modern medicine, and they had their own food, their own markets. And when they were pushed more and more to the west and the incoming of the Mexican Revolution, many Mexicans came to Barrio Laredito. So they started exchanging canciones, corridos, the music. But they have their own music to hear. So if you ask me how they survived through the love of their Mexican culture.
So what was it that led to the demolition of Barrio Laredito?
Well, it started happening in the 1940s when all the public housing started developing in the U.S., and they started building the Alazan courts.
And those are the public housing projects.
Mm-hmm. Since Laredito was already a very poor neighborhood, what the social policies of the city and of the government tried to do was, well, we don't want a housing project in downtown. We will take another policy for solving this problem, which was urban renewal. So urban renewal, it was a type of project that cities like Houston and Dallas and Fort Worth didn't accept. They said, no, we'll keep the people in their place and we'll do housing projects to help take them from that poverty and lack of water, running water, a pavement in the streets, all that. But San Antonio decided to demolish that neighborhood. So when the people were told about that, at the end, some people sued against the city. But they were just given replacement, money for buying another house. But they came with the bulldozers, and what they did was to tell them, this is the end, you have to leave, or here's the bulldozer. So they bulldozed on top of the people.
They had no political power to protest.
They didn't have an organization to protest. They tried, but they were not heard. Now think, at that time, when Mexicanos couldn't go into a restaurant because no black, no women, no dogs, no Mexicanos, It was after World War II and the civil rights movement and the Chicano movement that people, Mexicanas, started to gain some political power. But at that time, when that happened in Barrio Laredito, they couldn't do it. In that neighborhood, there were destroyed more buildings, historic buildings, from the 19th century, from the 18th century, and early 20th century. Barrio Laredito was practically destroyed because of commercial interests and government interests.
We've been speaking about the Barrio Laredito with cultural anthropologist Dr. Citlali Maria Centella and Dr. Jorge Luis Garcia Ruiz, an archaeologist and historian with the San Antonio campus of the Universidad Nacional Autónoma de México. Centella has authored a booklet that details the history of the nearly three-century-old San Antonio barrio, called Barrio Laredito, the Phoenix Firebird of San Antonio, 300 Years of Cultural Resilience. A conversation about the musical culture of Barrio Laredito and what remnants of the neighborhood endure today is online at tpr.org. Coming up next on Fronteras, the effort to get out the vote among the native tribes of Texas.
The great Colonial Sound and Light show is mind-bogglingly complex, and it's done a really good job at making America believe that we don't generally exist, and so our votes don't count, our stories don't count.
Stay with us. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.
Thank you, everybody. My name is Kerry. I'm an Indian man.
Hello. Hello, Kerry.
You know, I come with the main issue that I have bring to you that I want to talk about is, I like making babies, you know. I love making babies. I love it. And, you know, I have a few, you know. Like, I have at least, I have 13, you know, and 13 in Oklahoma.
Those are the 1491s, a sketch comedy troupe made up of Native American comedians. The group's name is a reference to the year 1491, the last year before the arrival of Christopher Columbus and widespread European colonization of the Americas. Through comedy, the 1491s are not just trying to make you laugh, but make their own people aware of some of the important issues affecting the indigenous community. And with important midterm elections around the corner, efforts are underway to get out the native vote. The San Antonio-based organization, American Indians in Texas at the Spanish Colonial Missions, has enlisted the 1491s as part of its Native Vote SA initiative. Carla Aguilar is development coordinator with the group, and she joins me in the studio along with Bobby Wilson of the 1491s to talk about the issues important to the Native community.
We've been doing surveys and interviews at different events from our local Native community, and they're the ones that have told us what their priorities are, which are first dealing with poverty, homelessness, substance abuse, and alcoholism. But we know that San Antonio doesn't have an adequate solution for those issue areas that respond through the lens of specifically for Native people. So there's those hard issues of being able to have access to employment and education, transitional housing and mental health support. But then there's also the underlying cultural need of folks to be able to be comfortable and a space where they can be fully themselves.
How large is the indigenous population in South Texas?
So our research is focused on Bexar County, and according to the research that we've done from community surveys, it's at about 26,000 people.
And what, in your past research, if you've discovered this at all, is the voter turnout for this population? Because it's pretty much well known that voter turnouts for the Latino population is very low, but do you have any numbers as to the indigenous population?
We're setting a baseline this year for ourselves because we've never had the opportunity to do this kind of work to identify from that 26,000 population pool, like what is our baseline to work off of? And then, you know, if we can at least nudge that forth and continue to build a base in Bexar County, identifying our issues and advancing those as a priority, then we can really do something. And even if it's increasing it by 3 to 5% every year. So our Native Votes campaign is launching right now, but we have plans for 2019 and our local elections. And how is it that the city of San Antonio is going to respond to the needs of our community in a substantial way in the municipal elections and then hold their feet to the fire as participants in the committee structure and getting our folks educated in how they can be a part of the system at the municipal level. And then for 2020 to participate in the presidential election, but also to have our folks be census takers and reach out to our Native community particularly, because then we can continue to participate in the political process to draw dollars in to support the programs and the activities that our community requires, which is different than the Latino community or other so-called minorities in San Antonio.
And so, Bobby, you're here with the comedy troupe, the 1491s, in order to sort of increase this voter awareness for the Native population. What do you think your role is in that whole process?
Well, the biggest role that I have is showing up, taking off most of my clothes on a stage, and jiggling what my mother didn't give me, and hopefully people laugh at that. Yeah. No, I just want to have a good time. I don't know. There's a very common thing, or at least a perception to me with Native artists and a lot of artists of color, you know, in all facets, not just in comedy, but in music and writing and all these sorts of avenues, that you have to be very politically charged. In a lot of ways, being an indigenous person in this country is already a political statement, being alive. When it comes to comedy in particular, I think a lot of it is very political, even if it doesn't necessarily mean to be that. But comedies, as an art form, is very much driven by the criticisms that we have about our society. And when I say we, I don't mean all Native people. I mean the individual telling those stories. And a lot of times what makes it so relatable is that we find that these are thoughts that a lot of other people have as well.
What are some of the any particular skits that you guys have done that you've really gotten a lot of reaction from, maybe politically, from some of the audience?
Well, we have one skit in particular that is called Master Debaters. It's about a couple of guys who are running for tribal chairman. It's like the chief or the president of the tribe, and they're both just total morons. You know, they don't really know anything about politics. They're just running because they can run, and they're just these insanely flawed individuals.
Would each of you like to explain how you will improve the livelihoods, the physical livelihoods of our tribal members?
What I propose the day after I get into office is to drop fertility drugs into the drinking water. We're actually dying out, people. We need more babies. We need to procreate.
Which is tons of fun to play with, because I think, you know, the general perception, at least from my standpoint, is that American politics are so fake. And I can only speak about American politics because those are the ones that I know about. But this thin veil of BS on all party lines, I'm going to say that, you know, you have to portray yourself as this unrealistic standard of morality. And that's Democrat, that's Republican, that's whoever, you know, like these are my ideals and I live them to the highest. But, you know, these are flawed human beings. And if you're going to keep voting, then, you know, go for it. But don't pretend like it's you're voting for, you know, the next Christ or something like that. You know what I mean?
Well, what kind of issues do you think are the most important in the Native community?
Well, I mean, our issues are everybody else's issues, but we also have a certain political status tribe to tribe. Every tribe is different, and how they engage in American politics is different. A lot of our issues, on a policy level, can really have a big impact on Native health care, on our status as sovereign nations. So, it really depends. Locally, we look at who we're voting for and how, and we try to ask those questions because a lot of times American Indian issues aren't addressed. Every year I look on my Facebook or on my Instagram and there's somebody complaining about like their candidate got up and they mentioned every single race except for the Native people, you know, and it is, you know, it's always funny. They'll get up and they'll be like, yes, this is for the African-American community, the Asian-American community, the Latinx communities, and
But everybody forgets who was here first.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, but I mean, you know, the great Colonial Sound and Light show is mind-bogglingly complex, and it's done a really good job at making America believe that we don't generally exist, and so our votes don't count, our stories don't count. And a lot of what my comedy troupe tries to do is bring ourselves and other Native stories to the forefront.
That was Bobby Wilson of the Native American sketch comedy troupe, the 1491s, and Carla Aguilar, development coordinator with American Indians in Texas at the Spanish Colonial Missions. Early voting ends November 2nd. And to hear more of our conversation, visit tpr.org. Thanks for joining us this week on Fronteras. You can find the show under the Programs tab on our website, tpr.org, and wherever you get your podcasts. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Lauren Terrazas. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our digital editor is Vince Kong. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.